Hello and welcome to the Jazz Podcast with me, Rob Cope, and today we're talking to Carol Nelson. But before we start, we're going to have a listen to Chrysalis from her album Night Vision. Carol Nelson, welcome to the Jazz Podcast. How are you doing?
Oh, great to see you. Great to meet you.
It's great to meet you too. I'm really excited to talk. Tell our listeners a little bit about who you are and then we'll talk about this track as well.
Okay. Well, I'm from London originally, but I've lived over in Ireland now since the mid-80s. I live in rural South County Carlow. I've been a musician of one kind or another all my life, and I'm 66 now. So my piano trio career didn't really start till 2015. So I've really found something that I'm just so happy to be doing. Three albums on just since I hit my 60s, which is brilliant. You know,
it's a wonderful and inspiring thing to hear. Tell us how you chose to start your piano trio. Why was 2015 the right time?
Because I was invited by there's a really well-known jazz promoter over here called Alan Smith. He was the first person to bring people like Jan Garbarek and Wayne Shorter into Ireland back in the 80s, and he put on a festival in Dublin of piano trio music. It was called Trio, Trio, Trio. There were three nights of trios. So I'd always been a piano player with singers, you know, like or with a sax player or whatever. You know, I hadn't kind of stepped up to, it felt like a step up to be a piano trio person. But anyway, I said, he asked me, would I do it? And I think he'd heard me on another gig. He must have heard me, yeah. I took it on, and at the time, I decided to call it the Carol Nelson Trio, which was partly a kind of a dare to myself, really. Now I wish I called it something like, you know, I don't know, Isosceles Triangle or something.
Well, there's a lot of those bands around, isn't there? And the thing about the Carol Nelson Trio is people know, I think from if like strictly a marketing perspective, it's better because people know what it is straight away.
I suppose so, but I'm kind of not naturally all about, you know, it's all about me kind of person. At least I hope I'm not.
I've heard things like this. Like a friend of mine told me that for his debut album, the label insisted that the cover be a picture of his face, you know. He was just mortified that this is how it was going to play out. But they kept saying, you know, people need to see who you are. And it always fascinates me how much like music gets made, half the artist and half someone in PR sort of telling them what they think will sell, you know, slightly surreal. So what made you move to Ireland? What made you decide?
I loved my London life. Until I got ill, and it was one of those things that took a long time to recover from. So I kind of lost the energy for being able to kind of, you know, rehearse in Brixton in the morning, gig in Stepney in the evening, you know, that kind of full on way I was functioning as a musician in the music scene then from the end of the 70s. Like I had my own band for a while, and then I was in a band with, do you know Carol Grimes? in London. She's been a singer on the sort of
right
scene there for a long time, jazz singer, R&B, blues. Anyhow, I started to think I wanted a quieter life, and I was visiting friends in Dublin, and they said, why don't you just come here for a few months to get well, and just never came back. I really liked it.
It's really wonderful to get out and go and live somewhere that you like as well. You know, that's a real gift. You don't have to be in London to have the career that you want. Whereabouts in London were you based?
Well, I was born in Southeast London, but I then lived for a long time in Brixton and in Hackney. So they were my, you know, haunts.
Right.
Yeah. I think in a way moving over here gave me, maybe I was just a little bit more removed, more able to just be a bit of a dreamer and just do what I wanted to do. What's the phrase? You plow your own furrow.
So what's the jazz scene?
Missed out on an awful lot of things as well. It's hard to balance it, but it is as it is.
Yeah, of course. What's the jazz scene like in your view?
It's changed so much since I first came here. It's very diverse. It's very full. There's a jazz degree course in Dublin and in Cork, and a really good music degree, contemporary music degree in Limerick. And it's just producing more and more musicians on an annual basis, you know. And there are not enough venues for the amount and quality of new music that's being created, in my opinion. It's hard to find. There isn't a regular dedicated jazz club. There's a place called Arthur's in Dublin. I'd say that's kind of dedicated jazz and blues club, but it's sort of hired out.
Here is not. I should know this. I suspect there's only about 6 dedicated jazz clubs in England, yeah. You know, places that don't do anything else. But the majority of our jazz scene is like pubs that are really struggling. So,
yeah,
you know, I think it's a really common problem that probably everyone is suffering of not having enough venues at the moment and not having enough funding or support, as you say, for the amount of music that's being made, because there's plenty of amazing people and albums kicking around.
I went to hear some young musicians who were playing. There's a very good jazz session in Kilkenny, the Sofa Sessions. They were playing there, and I was just blown away by how they were approaching their music, their improvisation. It's really exciting world, I think. So what else are they going to say about that? Festivals. We have a few long-going festivals, the Cork Jazz Festival, obviously. But that's, I think, a lot of people are quite disenchanted with that now. It's really about the drink. You know, you do get good artists going there. But I played recently at the Bray Jazz Festival, which I really, really liked. Opening up for Tord Gustafsson, which was
cool.
Wonderful experience, because I was playing to a full house that didn't know me.
Yeah.
But really, really were digging what we did, you know.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Did he do piano trio as well?
Yes.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So what made you decide that piano trio was going to be your voice?
Well, as I say, first of all, just because I was invited to do it.
Right.
And I knew that I would need to really focus on what I have to offer in that situation, which isn't the best technique in the world. I'd had an injury to my arms that sort of laid me off doing serious practice for a number of years. So in a way that then it kind of informed my style of composition as well. It would be like lift up the hands, drop them,
right,
and keep it very soft and very open. So, and anyway, I did this gig and I really, really enjoyed myself and it was well received. And yeah, I knew people were really feeling something. So I thought I can stay with this. We made our first album then in 2017 and that was just self-funded.
Right.
And then our second album, that was called One Day in Winter. And then the second album, then I got Arts Council funding.
How easy or difficult was it to do? Is that through like the Irish government that you received that funding?
Yes. There's okay. good there's good grant opportunities, I think, compared to the UK. The music.
It's very interesting because the UK's got a kind of reputation for being very inaccessible at the moment, the Arts Council grants, you know.
Well, we had lots coming out. There was a lot of grants available at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, with that awareness that musicians were on the front of losing work. I mean, with many others, but for sure there were no gigs. And all the associated technical people as well. But we had grants. I applied for 5 grants for different projects and I got 3 of them. So I was, you know, I was kept really busy.
Wow, that's amazing.
And one of them was to record Night Vision, our third album. So, yeah.
Who do you have on bass and drums on your albums?
Dominic Mullen is the drummer and Cormac O'Brien is our bass player. And we've endeavoured to really stay together as this is the trio. It's not Carol Nelson with an assortment of side
friends. Yeah.
It'd be nice to maybe do an album that we invite, you know, a trumpet player or something like that in.
Yeah.
Or to a gig that we do it that way. But what I wanted to be able to do was feel that we would grow together, that we would, the connection between us would grow. And I really feel that has happened.
I think as a listener, it's really a privilege to be able to go across the 3 albums and hear that. Like, I think it's a really nice thing to allow people to hear the growth and documenting where you are at each point by making and releasing albums.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and there is a huge difference between 1, 2, and 3, I think.
I'm curious on your website that you're a lyricist, a saxophone player as well.
Yes, I am.
You attempted to play your saxophones on an album.
Well, I'm playing soprano sax on a couple of tracks on Night Vision.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. If you have the album there, that it's on Enter Your Life and Mayfly, those 2 tracks. Which was an afterthought, obviously, because I couldn't do piano. And
I was going to say you like have to overdub them.
Yeah, when I was in the mixing process, I just thought, I think there's some room here. We'll try it out, some space for something here.
Yeah.
So I was really happy with that.
What made you choose soprano?
No, really. It just was calling me. This is a soprano thing. I couldn't say more strongly than that in any other way.
Just curious. Did you say it was Enter Your Life and Mayfly?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought, okay, great. How did you meet the bassist and drummer that you have now? Are these people that you've known for a long time?
They are, and I'd worked with them both before in different situations. In particular, a large part of my musician life has been with a group called Zrazy. That's where I was writing songs and, you know, producing albums with a singer called Maria Walsh. So we worked either as a duo or we worked with different musicians. So Dominic and Cormac were both have worked with us. In performance before.
Yeah. So how did it feel when you've like written these tunes to hear them for the first time with them playing as, you know, as your own trio?
Well, I think the first album was very much, here are the tunes, here are the charts, play them. It was like that, you know?
Right.
Whereas the next album, Arboreal, we had minimal rehearsal, I think, and then we were in the studio for about 2 days. And say Dominic would say, well, how do you, what feel do you want? How do you want me to play? And I'd say, I have no idea, just how it feels. Mm-hmm. So I was just trying to keep making open, more and more open spaces for what felt, what just felt good, what felt right. So that was, I just wanted them both to feel really, really happy what we're doing. Yeah. So I write very few bits that would be like, everybody's going to go at the same time. I just don't really approach things like that.
Yeah. Is it ever, does it frustrate you having to compose in a way that you know you're having to work around having had an injury in the past?
I feel like I've kind of gone beyond that in a way. Now, what I can't do is I can't sit at the keyboard and practice for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But I can do a 2-hour gig. And when I'm in flow, I don't feel the injury. But right. If I decide, oh, I'm going to practice this particular riff or chord sequence or pattern or whatever it is in every key, like if I set out with a mental idea of what I'm going to do to practice, I will quickly, you know, feel, okay, I have to stop now.
Yeah.
And I can't play classical music like I used to.
Is it just like a lack of sort of flexibility that makes it difficult?
Well, no, it's just like I'll lose sensation down the one half of my right hand.
Right, okay.
So it was just an injury-related RSI kind of thing that happened. But I have it, like there's some really fast playing on Night Vision, but that's because it's totally free, you know, and I'm just going, wham, go, move, don't stop, stay on it.
Yeah.
See what happens.
Yeah.
I can do that, but I don't feel constrained by my limitations.
Mm-hmm. You've reached a very inspiring emotional maturity over this, because I had a hernia when I was younger, and it put a temporarily, of course, because luckily we can fix those with science. But it was about 3 or 4 months where I couldn't play properly. I couldn't play, like, I was really scared to like really play at all in case it like strangulates, you know, which is not what you want. And doctors, that really is hard to get advice of, like, can I play a tenor sax with a hernia? People are like, nobody knows, you know? It's probably safer not to. But I found that constraint really frustrating, really hard to deal with. At no point did I look back and think, how could I calmly work around this? What else? You know, I was just so annoyed and frustrated.
I'm sure. I mean, that would be so challenge. I mean, just even to just hold basic long notes to bring it down to anything that simple, you're still engaging those muscles.
Yeah, exactly. And losing the practice time is scary. When people around me were playing, I was sort of thinking, would I ever make this time up or not, you know?
Well, that's interesting, Rob. And I had quite a lot of conversations with people who had, musicians who had difficulties, usually repetitive strain injuries. And and in jazz, there's just such a kind of fierce internal drive to stay developing, to stay on the path. And we're all inspired by the geniuses that came before us and wanting to keep expanding in terms of what we can do. But sometimes when there's a limitation, I think that can be just as creatively useful and interesting.
That's the maturity that I'm inspired by, is to not see it as a kind of frustration, but to work around it and build it into your music is wonderful.
Well, Beethoven went deaf, so let's remember Beethoven.
Okay, fair enough. Could be worse. No, that's a really good point. So tell us what's coming up. What have you got on the horizon? Anything you want to do or am doing and are excited to be doing?
Well, I am thinking of doing a saxophone project next with Ivan Jackman, who's the engineer who worked with all the trio albums.
Right.
And that, sorry, I just have to press my phone off. Stop it. sorry. So we just spoke about doing something kind of live, see how it goes, to use maybe some keyboards as well, and see what we came up with between us in terms of some Moog, him throwing me some curveballs in terms of effects when I'm playing live, just to see how we might work together with something. So that's in the pipeline, perhaps for to start that maybe November, December. Then there are gigs coming up, and at the beginning of this year, I thought I didn't have the will or the energy to go doing hustling. Excuse me. Stop it. I'm going to put this out of the room.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'll just, the album's coming out in June, and I'll just see if I get invited to do any gigs.
Right.
And that's been, I've had moments of doubt where I thought, oh, God damn it, I should have been on this on January. Mm. And most of the gigs that I would be able to do are art centres that I played in before.
Right.
Have some grant subsidy so they can cope with the fact that not that many people come to a jazz gig.
Yeah.
So small theatres, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, no, I some nice gigs coming up, a couple in the north. There's a Irish Women in Jazz group who are curating a series of Women in Jazz concerts in Dublin throughout September and October, so I'll be doing that. Playing in the Sofa Sessions in Kilkenny, which is really a wonderful gig. It's a great listening room. People come and you just, you can hear a pin drop for the whole
time. Oh, wow.
Wonderful. So they're the kind of gigs I like doing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's hard because it's not just about having hundreds of gigs. You know, I think as a jazz musician, as you sort of suggested a second ago, it's about finding a few gigs that, with the right audience, that can be really fulfilling.
Yes. I mean, I do a lot of other gigs with other people on, gig on application,
Yeah.
I'd say yes. Yeah.
What kind of things?
I play a Sunday afternoon vocal quartet, like voice, bass, drums, piano, and it's just standards.
Right.
And it's entertainment, and it's great fun.
Yeah.
So that's really lovely, and I've been doing that for years, and we're just a really solid crew. It's great. And then there's a singer in Wexford called Melanie O'Reilly, and I do gigs with her. And, different people that just ring up and say they're looking for a piano player. I'm also doing weddings. I'm playing wedding reception music, which is paying me kind of reasonably well. So I'm happy about that. And I thought, well, I could just go in there and feel like miserable, but actually I enjoy them. I started listening to a lot to that amazing album, Keith Jarrett, Melody at Night with You,
mm-hmm.
for inspiration for solo piano playing, because I hadn't really done much for a while. So I treat it as a practice session.
Yeah.
And I try to, it's funny, if you're playing for a wedding, like one of my favorite standards to play is I Fall in Love Too Easily. And then I thought, I can't play that.
Yeah. I think that about Love for Sale. I'm like, that's not,
No.
It's not appropriate right now.
And I I love something like I Love You, Porgy. I mean, I might be crying by the end of the song. I can't play that at a wedding.
No, it's gorgeous, that standard, isn't it? It's really great, though. I mean, you know, if somebody's going to pay you to play, you may as well enjoy it. I think it's a bit of an old, it's a bit, you know, who's got the time to, like, take a gig, get to play their instrument, and then be miserable the whole time? I find that slightly sort of self, what's the word, deprecating or something, you know, like, you know, you're out the house and someone's paying you. This is a win.
Yes.
A huge win. I've been looking at my map of Ireland while we've been talking, and it's been really interesting to just being able to hear you talk about different places, different clubs, and, you know, a lot of the things you've said are like things like dotted all over the country, which is really lovely.
Yes.
So let's finish by listening to Enter Your Life. Okay. So our lovely listeners can hear your soprano saxophone playing on top of this track as well.
Can I just say something about the album? Because
I would love that. Yes, please.
It became unexpectedly a lot more free improvisation than we were expecting. And there has been, on previous albums, there's been like maybe 5 minute piece that was playing, we played free, but this is 50% of the album. So it's a lot more intense in that, I think.
Yeah.
So that's all I need to say, I suppose. Whereas, so 50% came, I came in with compositions.
Right.
And they're kind of probably a little easier on the ear, and the improvisations were intense. So, yeah.
Well, it's beautifully done. And as you said earlier, there's a lot, there's space for the music to breathe and to evolve, which is really often overlooked or underrated. So congratulations on these wonderful albums. Okay, here we go. This is Enter Your Life.